The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Right, a particular honour now to have Michael O'Leary live in studio. And this is a special week because on this week in July 1985, yes, and I was a TD at that stage, I remember the inaugural flight. I think there was about 18, 15 passengers from Waterford to Gatwick. And who knew? Today, more than 200 million passengers, a 40-year history. It's worth about 30 billion. Not Michael's worth that alone, but it's an extraordinary Irish entrepreneurial success story. And where I want to start, Michael, is a little bit of just a genuflection to Tony Ryan, because not only did he found Ryanair, which had a rickety enough start, but also with GPA, we now have an aviation leasing business, which should not necessarily be here, worth 300 billion. 70% of all leased planes are done through finance in Ireland. He was an extraordinary man.
He was, and all the more extraordinary for the humble beginnings, born in a son of a train driver, not well educated, left school at 15 and became a baggage handler in Shannon. And you look at what he went on to achieve, all of which was, you know, largely through incredible hard work, incredible drive and incredible vision. And I was one of the very fortunate people in the 1980s when Ireland was a sad and depressed place. There was three businessmen, Irish businessmen, who were leading, had an international view of the world. And that was Michael Smurfit, Tony O'Reilly and Tony Ryan. And I went to work for him for free for a year.
So you were with KPMG, were you, as an accountant?
Started with KPMG.
Couple of newspaper shops in Terranure in that area.
Yeah, which were great cash business at the time. The revenue didn't know how much cash you were taking out of the till. And it was a great way of making money quickly in your early 20s. Yeah, and those days are all gone. But the opportunity to work with somebody like that, and he really did have a global vision. What he has, and you look at the aviation leasing, he largely created the aviation leasing sector. Now, it would have happened eventually anyway because of the capital cost of aircraft, but he created it. And much of the aircraft leasing industry that is now domiciled here in Ireland is all ex-GPA alumni.
What did you learn from him personally? You were very close. Was he a mentor to you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, for a number of years. I mean, you learned I think incredible work ethic, incredible ambition. You know, we never stopped. There was never, you know, like this week we're celebrating our 40th birthday and we've had to go, oh, what do we do for our 40th birthday? Nothing. Grow more. You know, I have no interest in 40th birthdays, 45th, 50th. Get on with it. Look forward, not look back. And that was very much Tony's modus operandi. But you also learned he also made mistakes. You know, and Ryanair was undoubtedly one of his great mistakes. He set up
You told him to close it down.
I recommended shut it down. He was never, ever going to make money, which just goes to show how little I knew about the industry. Mind you, he knew even less than me. For a man who was making so much money out of aircraft leasing, which is basically selling overpriced aircraft to loss-making airlines, to get into the loss-making airline space was not one of the brightest decisions he made. But he genuinely did want to make air travel affordable between Ireland and the UK.
Okay.
And so, you know, there was you couldn't fault the underlying ethos or the underlying strategy, but the execution was terrible.
Okay, let's talk about some of the contemporary aviation issues. And of course, Ryanair is much bigger than Ireland's aviation issues, but we are an island. Mm-hmm. And for our whole economy, not just hospitality, for our whole economy to function and grow, we need to have a functioning Dublin airport. Mm-hmm. So the programme for government and every politician in government I meet are in favour of getting rid of the 32 million outdated cap. So this comes from a decision, I think, in 2008.
Seven.
2007.
Yeah.
So talk us through exactly what the problem is and why the solution isn't at hand, given that there's allegedly the political will to resolve it.
Yeah. So in 2007, in giving permission for the second terminal, at the time traffic was 15 million, the planning authorities in their inestimable wisdom decided, oh, well, you know, if Dublin Airport grew to 30 million passengers, all the road network around Dublin Airport would collapse or come to a halt because the traffic would just block everything. This was before the M50 and the M1 motorways and all the investment in motorways. And that was a condition of the second terminal. It was fine at the time, but times move on. What I find extraordinary
so
is...
So was that a Bord Pleanála decision or a Fingal County Council?
Fingal and Bord Pleanála. It's the usual planning nonsense. Oh, we'll cover our arse here because in 10, 20 years' time the world might have changed and let's put in rules now for what might happen when nobody has a clue what will happen in 10 or 15 years' time. They then, what I find extraordinary, Bord Pleanála and Fingal County Council gave planning permission for the second runway in 2015. Now, the second runway was going to take capacity at Dublin Airport up to 60 million passengers. But nobody thought to go back and, what do we do about this 2007 road traffic issue that limits the traffic at 32 million passengers? And so we have runway capacity for 60 million. We're the envy of Europe in that we've actually built the runways. Dalton Phillips, to be fair, built it during COVID, which was the sensible thing to do. We have capacity for 60 million passengers, but the airlines are not allowed to use it. And we have two nonsensical things going on. So one, we have this idiotic 2007 road traffic restriction, despite the fact that we've upgraded all the roads and the M50 and the M1 and the M3 and the M4 all move fine. We're already at 32 million passengers and the roads haven't come to a... And in fact, this summer, because of the airlines took a court case and we've... So that basically the planning cap has been suspended while the European courts...
Just to explain that. So a high court case was taken to say that under Open Skies EU policy, that kind of...
Well, there's two things. One, under the EU policy, which is freedom of movement, you can't artificially cap an airport. And then under the EU-US Open Skies agreement, you can't cap artificially if there's capacity available at an airport in Europe. So this cap is now illegal under EU law.
Is that pending an ECJ decision?
It is going to the ECJ, but it'll take 18 months, 2 years to get to the ECJ. But the good news is that the cap is suspended pending the ECJ, which means this summer we'll be at 36 million passengers. So the cap is completely redundant anyway, and we're never going to go back. Now,
What is your ask of Dara O'Brien?
Our ask of Micheál Martin. Okay. There was an election held in November. All the main parties said we're going to scrap the cap. And here's the key thing in the programme. They have a programme for we will scrap the cap as soon as possible. 7 months later, we're at the end of July and nothing has happened. You have a government with a 20-seat majority. There won't be another election for 5 years. Pass legislation, either abolishing the cap or, better still, taking all of Ireland's airports planning.
No, because Eamon Ryan said that he didn't have the power to do it. And so, obviously, why do you think they haven't done?
Well, firstly, Eamon Ryan lied repeatedly when he said they didn't have the power to do it. The Minister for Transport has the ability to issue directions to Dublin Airport and to the IAA in the legislation. We even drafted the letter for him. So at a stroke, he could direct Dublin Airport to ignore the cap. Now, I accept Eamon Ryan was a Green Party, you know, don't want any transport. We all want to go back to bicycles and comely virgins over half doors in the west of Ireland, all that kind of nonsense. But that's not the point. We've moved on from that. We have a programme for government that was published in January that says we will remove this cap as soon as possible. We have a government with a 20-seat majority and we have a 5 years to the next election. So
But there does seem to be something which I don't understand with the Attorney General that they say prohibits them from doing it.
No, nothing with the... But it's all part of the usual waffle you get out of, we're consulting with the Attorney General. What are you consulting with the Attorney General for? You have a government with a 20-seat majority. You have a programme for government that says you'll abolish this cap as soon as possible, pass legislation.
And what impact is that having, the cap, in terms of airfares? And for transatlantic, it's not your business, but transatlantic, in terms of people can't plan for future schedules?
In the very short term, because of the successful court action by the airlines, the cap is having no effect on short-haul travel. But the Americans, the Asian airlines, will not commit to investing in new routes here at Dublin Airport where there is a risk that this cap will be reimposed in 2 years' time. If, for some reason, I don't think it will, but if the court case fails, the cap could be reintroduced. And we have two things going on at Dublin Airport. One, you have the cap, and two, you have the utterly nonsensical nighttime noise restrictions.
Which we're coming to. Okay.
So none of the long-haul airlines, the Americans, the Asians, will invest in new routes here. It'll take them 3 or 4 years for those routes to break even or make money, and they won't put in that investment, despite the fact that we have an empty second runway and we have lots of capacity here.
So it's really on the transatlantic side it's impacting
most. It's on the long-haul side at the moment. The short-haul is largely protected because we have this injunction.
Which is interim.
Yeah, which is only interim.
Okay. Now, Entirely separate to that is this issue of night flights. So my understanding is that on board Planola last September issued a draft ruling limiting nighttime flights to 13,000 a year, which works out at fewer than 36 per night.
Mm.
Now, that was a kind of draft decision, and I'm told that the full decision is imminent. So, leaving aside the cap altogether, is this not a really serious restriction?
It is. It's almost more serious, particularly for the American airlines who all arrive in here. The problem with this issue is the definition of what a nighttime is. At most airports across Europe, nighttime is defined as midnight until about 5:30 or 6 a.m. In Ireland, we define nighttime here as 11 p.m. to about 7 a.m. And most of the transatlantic flights land between 5 and 7 a.m. in the morning. There's a limit on the number of flights that can take off in that nighttime window. And this would be solved if you moved that nighttime window to midnight to either to 5:30 or even to 6 a.m. If you moved the definition of nighttime from 11 a.m. to from 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. to midnight to 6 a.m., problem would go away.
So that's just a two-hour change.
It's a two-hour change. But Bord Pleanála keep making a mess of this thing. Bord Pleanála, when they reviewed this thing, we had the nighttime restriction. They've lifted that nighttime restriction on the number of flights, but then they've reintroduced it by the back door. They went off.
Just on this, because...
And Bord Pleanála are
Matt
useless
Cooper
at
sent
this.
Me last night on our podcast an email of someone saying, because Matt and I were calling for the cap to be lifted, and this person said, "Wait till I tell you about my life. I live within 2 miles of the airport. I can't sleep every 30 seconds. There's this booming sound and that." Do you have any sympathy for the rest of us?
Absolutely none. I mean, it's all fucking made up. We went around, we have got the three objectors. There's a guy out there who appointed himself the chairman of the Ballybottle Community Council. It doesn't exist. It's a website or it's a Facebook page. There is no such thing as a Ballybottle. We've opened up two runways, which straight away has halved the number of flights over St. Margaret's anyway, because half of them have gone to the second runway. Secondly, there are no nighttime flights taking off over your house between the hours of midnight to 6:30, 6 o'clock in the morning. And if you're in your bed and your windows are closed, you won't even hear it. You're more likely to be disturbed by traffic on the St. Margaret's Road than you are by aircraft taking off. The aircraft today are 50% quieter than they were 5 or 10 years ago. It is an utter nonsense. We put a video up on our website. We sent around a noise measuring site to St. Margaret's, to Ballybottle and to Ashbourne. There's less noise with an aircraft directly overhead of those three sites than there is in any of the main roadways in Dublin during the daytime. And they talk, "There's a primary school there. The children can't sleep." The children are only in the primary school from 9 o'clock until about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. They're out playing in the playground and they make more noise than the bloody aircraft overhead. So it's all NIMBY nonsense. You built a house in the environs of Dublin Airport. Dublin Airport's been there since 1942. You either moved to the area or you built a house behind the area. But in any
event... So you're saying suck it up.
Suck it up. And in any event, you've now got two runways. So if your house is in St. Margaret's, you have 50% fewer flights over your house because of the second runway. This is the problem. The problem is these guys have a disproportionate influence on local county councillors in Fingal. And you have this kind of NIMBYism determining national aviation policy. Dublin is our gateway to an island on the periphery of Europe. We want to continue growing in Dublin. All that growth will take place on much quieter aircraft. But we need the Minister for Transport to be responsible for the growth of airports, not local councils in Fingal or Waterford or Shannon or Cork.
Now, you were very critical of the EU Commission President Ursula von der Leyen on
von der
breakfast.
Yeah.
Insofar as these overflights in France, in terms of not affecting local French flights, but the air traffic controllers. Has there been any progress on this?
Absolutely none. For 25 years, Europe has wasted 20 billion euros and 20 years on this single European skies project, and they have made not one centimetre of progress. There are two very simple fixes to this, and the airlines have been calling for it for years. One, protect overflights during national ATC strikes. We don't need French air traffic controllers to overfly France during a strike. The Irish and the Italians or the Spanish and the Germans can do the overflights themselves. So all you have to do is protect overflights. On the two
days, is this above 35,000 feet?
The upper airspace.
Okay.
So as long as you're not taking off and landing in France, and those are the flights that should be cancelled during a French ATC strike. But what the French government do, as the French always do, is they use minimum service legislation to protect the local French flights. And they cancel all the overflights, or a disproportionate amount of the overflights. So when the French go on strike, it's the Irish, the Spanish, the Germans and the Italians take all the cancellations, not the French. There is a legal mechanism in place. Spain, Italy and Greece protects overflights and cancel the local flights. And all we've been saying for about 5 years, Ursula von der Leyen, this is a single market competence. During Brexit, you kept telling us that the single market is the most important thing in Europe. We will defend the single market on the hills, in the beaches, whatever. And yet when the French closed the skies over the centre of the European single market, as they do for recreational strikes this time of the year, she sits on her hands doing nothing. So we think she should quit. Either reform it, fix it, or quit.
Of bad news for you, she's going to survive a confidence vote
She'll
today.
She'll survive this
comfortably,
time.
She will.
But I mean, we'll keep asking the question, why every time there's a strike are you not protecting overflights? And she'll, like a nodding dog in the back of the car, oh, it's a national competence.
All right.
The single market of Europe is not a national competence. We keep asking the Irish Department of Transport, what do you guys do when you go to your council meetings twice a year about overflights? Because Ireland is the country that has the most flight cancellations because of our geographical position relative to France. And our useless civil servants in the Department of Transport will sit there drinking the tea, eating the biscuits and doing nothing.
Now, I don't know whether you're a climate sceptic or not, and we're both in our mid-60s and we're sad.
Early
and,
60s.
Well, I'm 65. I'm male, pale and stale. But the point about it is this. I actually think if you look forward to 2060, 2070, you cannot deny the 2 degrees, maybe 3 degrees of global warming. You know, it is really starting to affect our climate. We see more extreme weather and so on. So aviation is about 2.5% of total emissions. But the thing about aviation is if you look at continents like Africa and the low level of flights, it's only going to go one way. Global aviation is going to increase. What can be done at a technical level in terms of aircrafts, in terms of sustainable fuel, to deal with this issue of aviation contributing to global warming?
Okay, first, let's back it up for a second. One, I'm not a climate skeptic. The climate is changing. The climate is getting warmer and we do need to decarbonize. What I am a skeptic of, though, is that taxing consumers is going to alter that plan. So, they have, you know, for some reason, the airlines, who only account for 2% of the emissions, and yet we account for about 15% of GNP through tourism, have become the kind of kicking boy for this thing.
In fairness, agriculture and transport and the built environment, everywhere is affected.
Well, except the concrete manufacturers and the power generators almost are exempt from all of this.
No, that's not true. We've gone from 35% renewable electricity to 80%.
Nobody.
Even in concrete, they are trying to get slag from steel to do it. Like, take it from me because I do a lot of work in that area. They're all affected by this.
The people who got the biggest allocation of free emissions was the concrete industry. The people who got the least was the airline industry. Anyway, back to the airlines. So it's 2% today. Shipping, by the way, accounts for 4% and motor transport 26% of Europe's CO2 emissions. But all of our growth will take place in the next 10 years on new aircraft that could reduce fuel consumption by 40% and reduce noise by 50%. So most of our growth will actually not result in an increase in that those emissions on a per passenger basis. But to this last year in Ryanair, and we carried 200 million passengers, we paid almost €1 billion in environmental taxes on behalf of our passengers. So our passengers paid on average €4.50 last year in environmental taxes.
Is there any tax on aviation fuel?
No, not on aviation fuel.
Well, that seems a bit.
But it's untaxable. I mean, the difficulty they've always had with aviation fuel is actually if you tax it in one country, we'll uplift it in the other country. And so they said, look, we can't limit this, you can't regulate it. And that's actually true. I mean, but
it does seem like when you go up to the forecourts here, we pay a fortune in tax, that there's no tax on aviation fuel seems a little bit bizarre.
The idea there's no tax on aviation fuel is now a myth because that's how they've introduced all these environmental taxes. So last year we paid €1 billion in environmental taxes. Our fuel bill was about €5 billion. So we're now paying about 20% tax on our fuel. Nevertheless, the growth that will be delivered by airlines is on new technology aircraft and engines. They will carry about 20% more passengers, burn 20% less fuel. So the fuel and CO2 emissions will come down by about 40%. But taxing our passengers for the privilege of flying on that is not going to do anything for it. We've asked the question, where does these environmental taxes go? 200 million of it last year went directly back to the Department of Transport. Guess what they did with it? 50 million.
Well, public transport,
Even worse. 50 million got blown on the EPA, the greatest complete waste of money. The EPA shut it down in the morning. 150 million went on, the school bus fleet. Probably the least environmentally efficient operation in the entire country. So, in a time of massive public surpluses, Airline passengers are subsidising the school bus fleet when the Department of Transport and Education should be funding the school bus fleet out of their own budget.
Okay. Some quick fire. Shane Carroll. I worked for Ryanair in 96 in Finchley Road and then Cunningham Road for a year. Great company to work for with fantastic people. Good times indeed. How does Michael feel about over-tourism protests?
Actually, in most countries, you look at Venice, Barcelona, the over-tourism is not a kind of a protest against tourism. It's much more a protest against Airbnb and that their kids and people who live locally can't rent affordable accommodation. They all said they want tourism to continue to grow, but we need a solution that creates affordable accommodation for people.
It's
a housing issue, not a tourism issue.
Okay, congratulations to Michael and Ryanair. Great 40 years. Thanks for making travel an option for so many of us. A great Irish success story. Michael, any tips for Galway? He always runs down his horses, but could you nominate one horse that you're excited about?
Nothing in Galway. If I'm running a horse in Galway in the middle of August, it's a horse I don't like or who will be going to the sales in September.
Is there anything in your whole Gigginstown thing that might win a Gold Cup?
Oh, might win a Gold Cup. Ugh.
Give me one.
I mean, the obvious one at the moment would be Brighter Days Ahead, the mayor, but, you know, she kind of blew her, she blotted her copybook at Cheltenham this year. She'll go chasing now in September and she might in 2 years' time become a Gold Cup horse. But who knows? It's
Can
too
you ask
far
Michael,
away to know.
Why doesn't he fly more flights out of Knock?
We have increased the number of flights out of Knock this year by about 20%. Knock, Shannon and Cork have all got new routes and additional aircraft this year. They're growing very strongly. And it's one of the areas where we're seeing dramatic growth from regional routes to places in Spain and Portugal during the summer. There's still very little traffic in Knock and Shannon and Cork in the winter. But in summer, there's a lot of outbound traffic there.
Yeah, someone else asks about, do you have any plans to grow Cork? They feel you have a fixation forcing people towards Dublin.
We don't, but I mean the difficulty is, you know, our base in Cork is now up to 3 aircraft this winter. Shannon grows to, we have 4 based aircraft in Shannon this winter. Like, we are investing in growing in Shannon, Cork. But the real challenge, and you know, when I was growing up, I had a friend of mine who lived in Nina. In those days, he always went, he flew out of Cork or Shannon. Once the motorways were opened, Dublin is much more accessible to the vast majority of the population that lives in the Midlands, rather than going past Limerick to get to Shannon or past Cork to get to Cork Airport. And there's, God be with them, there's a load of people in Waterford determined to reopen an airport in Waterford. Waterford will never be a commercial proposition because it's now within that 2-hour catchment area of Cork Airport and of Dublin Airport. And people who live in Goree, where do you go if you had a choice? Would you drive up to Dublin Airport where you'd have a much wider range of flights and lower fares?
I take the ferry. I don't fly. I have a phobia about flying.
Well,
but anyway,
you need to get over that phobia again.
Getting to the airport. Dublin Airport's a problem. Why can't there be a shuttle service at 20-30 minutes to and from the airport from Westland Road to facilitate anyone on a train or Dart from Wexford or Belfast? Do you feel about Metrolink?
The government should save 20 billion today by cancelling Metrolink. Complete and utter. It'll be a bigger.
But it's the only airport in Europe, that doesn't have a rail link to the city centre.
It isn't actually, but it's the only airport in Europe that's only 9 kilometres from the centre of the city that has a tunnel and area that takes you bus. 30% of the traffic going to and from Dublin travels by bus. Dublin Airport is very well served by buses. The problem with that question is it presupposes, as does the Metro, that everybody's going to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, find their way into Stephen's Green to get the Metro, which probably won't start because it'll be public transport until 6:30 in the morning, and then take you out to Dublin Airport. The buses actually are the way forward.
As we're speaking, News Talk lawyers are having a complete hissy fit with something you said, which I need to deal with later on before we finish, okay?
It's taken 20 minutes.
But just some personal questions. Mm. Okay, your kids are growing up, you got in and out of horse racing. You got paid the 100 million bonus, did you?
No. I got share options. We've triggered the target for the 100 million share options.
You're entitled
options.
To it, yeah?
No, but I have to stay. I don't get them until 2028. I have to stay there until 2028 to get them.
Oh, dear.
And by the way, when I get the 100 million share options, I will pay Pascal Donoghue 55 million.
No, and you're crazy to be tax,
the government will
tax
get,
resident
the government
in Ireland.
Will
yeah.
get okay. most of my share options.
No, but just on your future, there's two personal questions I want to ask you is, okay, so you've been a one-trick pony. 88, you're CFO in Ryanair, CEO 1994. And I mean, like all of us have to face this on our deathbed. Now, I've done politics, business, media, and so on.
All badly, nevertheless.
No, with moderate success. I'd agree with that. But the point I'm trying to make to you is this, that is there anything that you want to do other than Ryanair?
Look, I wanted to get married. I wanted to have
no,
a family.
No, I meant business-wise, career-wise.
Business-wise, no. Look, this is the most exciting company in Europe. We still have very ambitious plans. Like, we did 200 million passengers last year. In 8 years' time, we intend to grow that to 300 million passengers.
Okay.
You know, so this is a very exciting, we're revolutionising air travel across Europe. We will own...
So you have no, there's no succession plan?
Oh, there is a succession plan. The board goes through a succession plan every year.
But not till 2029, what I'm just hearing.
I could get run over by a bus here or by a pony and trap on Stephen's Green as I leave the building here. So there has to be a succession plan in place. But my contract, I'm contracted up to 2028. We haven't started discussion with the board what happens after 2028.
So the final thing I want to ask you is this, that you're a great man for talking the talk and you do it colourfully and with charisma and all that. But actually, you haven't walked the walk. There has been, you know, we've been through crashes and troikas and everything. And never once have you taken on any state role where you might give of your talents, give of your time to help any state organisation. Why not?
Well, firstly, my role here is to generate lots of tax revenue for the Irish state, and I'm the biggest taxpayer in the country, so I have to keep going. Two, I make lots of suggestions to how the state could be improved. It's just that nobody ever pays any attention to them. I mean, the department...
No, but why not roll up your sleeves and take something like planning? Why wouldn't you take on Paul Reid's job as head of on board Planola?
We have a strict rule in Ryanair, no outside gigs, you know, so we don't allow any of our people to become non-executive directors of boards, to join state companies, all the rest. We have a couple of retired, bewildered executives like Michael Cawley, who, God bless him, keeps volunteering for these jobs. He's now on the board of the HSE. I can't imagine what he's doing on the board of the HSE.
He needs help.
But I have to lead from the front. Like, we are growing so fast. And we are doing such imaginative things. I don't honestly have the time, apart from minding my family, my farm, and my airline. There is no more time in the day.
All right. Now, I want to thank you very much for coming in. Now, I've been asked to read this out. It's been put in very bold print for me. There is legitimate concerns from people in the community of Ballybokel, and we've heard from. Here at News Talk, so it should be said they are real people in that area impacted, and it's more than a Facebook page. I don't require you to respond to that. I want to thank you for coming.
Check out the Ballybogle Community Council.
Okay, all right. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank
we
you,
wish
Ivan.
You another 40 years of success. A lot of people are very proud of what Ryanair has achieved. It is an inspiration from an entrepreneurial perspective, and we wish you every continued success.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.